Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everybody, welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, senior editor at Billboard and Broadway expert here. So it's a well-established fact at this point that a lot of movies are adapted into Broadway musicals these days. Some of them make sense, others do not make so much sense. But if there's one movie that in retrospect was probably for years crying out to come to the stage, it's School of Rock, the 2003 film starring Jack Black. On so many levels, it made sense to become a musical. Of course, there's the basic plot, which is all about how a music teacher introduces rock and roll to the kids at a strict private elementary school and changes their lives so much for the better. The movie was directed by Richard Linklater, whose films have always had music as basically kind of their lifeblood. And, of course, Jack Black himself is in a rock band, Tenacious D. So it was always completely about music and the thrill of performing it. So when School of Rock did debut on Broadway, it didn't feel like a huge surprise. But what was kind of shocking was the fact that the music, aside from a couple of songs which transferred from the film, was by Andrew Lloyd Webber, the longtime Broadway legend who wrote Cats and Phantom of the Opera, among many other very grand shows that maybe don't immediately bring to mind rock or a great sense of humor. But yet another very pleasant surprise was that it turned out he was a great match for this material. He clearly was having a lot of fun with it because the musical totally captures the joy and the rock energy of the movie from beginning to end. School of Rock opened on Broadway in late 2015. It ended up getting 4 Tony nominations at the time. And it just recently announced that after this very long run, it will close January 20th of next year, 2019. So now seemed like the perfect time to catch up with a group from the show, see how it's going. This is definitely one of the most diverse groups of guests I've had on the podcast. There's Justin Collette, who plays the lead role of Dewey. Levi Buxbazin, who as Freddie is one of the incredibly talented kids in the show. He knows more about metal than probably I do or many other grown-ups. And music supervisor Ethan Pop, who has been with School of Rock since its beginnings on stage. This is surely the only podcast about Broadway where you will hear a stellar rendition of a Foo Fighters hit. So please enjoy my chat with some of the band from School of Rock. Pissed. There's been one solution since the world began. Don't you see and take it, stake it to the man. Rant and rave and scream and shout and stick your middle finger out and rack your room and rip your jeans and show them what rebellion means. One march to someone else's caravan. What a serious group of people I have here today.
Very
in the Billboard Library.
Absolutely, yeah. Serious.
So who are all of you?
I'm Ethan Pop. I'm the music supervisor of School of Rock.
I'm Levi Buxbazin. I play Freddie the drummer in School of Rock.
I'm Justin Collette. I play Dewey Finn in School of Rock.
And in case it wasn't clear that you play Dewey, you walked into the office today doing like some sort of Ministry of Silly Walks situation.
No, it's my dance. I'm a mover.
It's actually how he walks down the street for the most part.
He needs a 5-foot radius around him at all times.
I do, which is tricky in this city, but I poke a lot of eyes out.
You make it work.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I'm delighted to see all of you. I saw School of Rock when it first opened, so I feel like it's probably maybe changed in some ways since I first got there. But you guys are, I think, like the closing Broadway cast, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. We're gonna take this thing out in a blaze of glory. White hot glory into the sunset. Horses, sunset, glory.
Rainbows. I was gonna say no pressure at all, but you are the people who history will remember.
Good.
Hopefully positively.
Hopefully positively.
Yes. So I have to say, Ethan, you have more piercings than the usual Billboard on Broadway guest.
Yeah, does that read on a podcast? Can everyone see it?
I told you the physical bits were going to pay off. I told you all of our physical bits were going to pay off.
I wish there were like whatever the visual version of like smell-o-vision would be for podcasting.
It's a television.
It's an actual television where people do interviews, not like on the radio. I'm curious whether you all came to this show from a sort of purely Broadway background, or what were you kind of doing musically before you came to School of Rock?
Oh my goodness. Well, I came to Broadway completely by accident. I studied performance music when I was in college, and thinking I was going to be some sort of, I don't know, rock star, something or other. And it was actually the summer after my freshman year of college that I started music directing in theater and conducting orchestras. And I thought it was just going to be something that that I did temporarily as like a summer job. And here I am now, 20 some odd years later, still doing it and supervising shows and orchestrating and arranging. And But I didn't purely come from Broadway. It was just kind of by accident.
And have you stayed in the kind of like rock pop musical realm before this, or was this like a departure for you?
No, this was I think right in my wheelhouse. I mean, I was the supervisor, arranger, orchestrator for Rock of Ages back in 2007, 2008.
Yes.
And then did the worldwide productions of that, Motown the musical, you know, and sort of, you know, this sort of music was very much you know, in the realm of what I grew up listening to in terms of like, you know, guitar driven rock and roll. So it just seemed like a very natural, natural fit.
Awesome. Levi, how did you become the rockin' drummer on stage?
So I really did not want to be on Broadway before this. Like, my family's always been a huge like theater family, so I kind of just like watched the Tonys, just sat back, and I'm like, oh, you know, yeah, it's cool and all, but I didn't really think much of it until my mom was just like, hey, they're looking for a drummer in School of Rock, and I'm like, all right, we can do that. And then I started auditioning and then got callbacks, and that's kind of when I became more serious about it. That was, yeah.
But is this like your first musical, period?
I did one other musical in Charlotte, but that's it.
So I guess you're, the bar is set high. It's only downhill from here.
What do you think of Broadway now?
I love it. It's great. It's a magical world.
Nice.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
It's a magical world. Yeah, I didn't see myself coming to to Broadway. I did a lot of my voice sounds weird. There we go. I did a lot of stage acting and improv and sketch comedy is more like the background that I come from. Mm-hmm. I was also in a band. That was kind of my first foray into arts, I guess, was writing and playing rock music. And so when the audition for this came across my email inbox, I was like, well, this is perfect. This is perfect for me. This is like a Venn diagram of everything that I've ever done. And then I auditioned for it, and also here I am. And it's a magical place.
It is.
It's so magical.
Very magical.
It's magical.
I feel like the two of you should take like an act on the road just from...
We do. Yeah. I'm a ventriloquist, and he talks. <He's>...
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Is that our act?
Yeah.
We're going to take our pipes on the road. We have sweet pipes, yes, which again, reads on radio. It's perfect. Our biceps are amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, yeah, I wanted to know before we talk about the band on stage, like, what are your personal histories with bands? Like, what do you play? Like, what were your rock inspirations before coming to the School of Rock?
Oh my goodness, should I start?
Yeah, let's do it.
I grew up playing piano. I mean, starting when I was 5 years old. And the inspiration for that was actually listening to film music. For whatever reason, I grew up an hour outside of Boston in the era where John Williams was conducting the Boston Symphony and the Boston Pops, and went to see E.T. Should give you some indication of how old I am. When I was about 4 years old, and fell in love with the music of E.T. and started playing piano and begged my parents to take piano lessons. They eventually allowed me to, and I was sort of directed towards classical music. But then I started, you know, paying attention to how piano was used in things like Motown music and, you know, different pianist singer songwriters, Billy Joel, Elton John, Bruce Hornsby, and discovered that there was something else, you know, in that could be done with piano other than classical music. And then during high school, I lived in a town called Sunapee, New Hampshire, which no one has ever heard of, except for the fact that Steve Tyler of Aerosmith grew up there.
Oh.
And still has a summer home there. And when I was flipping hamburgers at the little place on the lake when I was 14 years old, Steven Tyler and his wife and their kids used to come up to the window to get ice cream. And at the time I was playing in a band, and I thought that was really cool, and thought, oh, well, maybe there's something more to music than just having it be a hobby. You know, if this guy can do it, maybe I can do it too.
Did you ever pitch him on, like, can we open for you guys? I would have found that impossible to resist at 14 or 15. I would have, like, tried to get into Aerosmith.
No.
No?
No, we were a little shy. You know, we were playing on, a little bandstand in front of 50 people. And, you know, Steve Tyler and Joe Perry walk up and watch us holding their ice cream cone with their kids. And you're like, okay. Time to level up.
Amazing. I have to interject and just ask, because it comes up on the podcast so much, like Billy Joel as an inspiration for theater people.
Yeah.
Like, why? I actually just saw him in Madison Square Garden for the first time. And it was,
yeah, I saw him a couple months ago, too.
It's pretty great.
He's
right?
Amazing.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So why do theatrical people love Billy Joel so much? Do you have theories?
I think it's because his music is lyrical in a way that that music theater is, too. Mm-hmm. Like, music theater music tends to... the chords tend to follow the story of the song, and I think that Billy Joel is one of the only pop artists I can think of that actually follows that structure. Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't have like a 1-4-5 like standard pop progression that a lot of artists use in their songs. His like Scenes from an Italian Restaurant is just the music follows where his story's going.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that matches up a lot with what music theater is. I also think that he's got just the widest array. Like, he did Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, and also, like, We Didn't Start the Fire. So his range is incredible of the type of songs that he writes. But Ethan, you probably
know. I think for me it comes down to two things. One, like Justin was saying, the music is compositional in nature as opposed to just being Buddy Holly, you know, 1-6-4-5, here's some chords and here's a story. But it's also, you know, he's not just a lyricist, but he's a storyteller. And if you look at his first album, Cold Spring Harbor, all the way through...
Underappreciated, I feel.
Absolutely underappreciated. All the way through River of Dreams, it tells the story of this guy's life growing up on Long Island. And you listen to the first track on Cold Spring Harbor all the way through the last track on River of Dreams, and you have the story of his life, much like we use songs to tell stories in theater. So I think that is a huge reason why people within theater arts tend to look to Billy Joel as some sort of inspiration or having some sort of effect on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that makes sense to me. Levi, so tell me about how you came to rock, because I feel like a lot of young people today, rock is maybe not the first thing they listen to.
It should be, because it's just
yes.
fantastic.
Preach.
Yes. So, I started playing drums when I was about 4 years old. And about, I don't know, a couple years back, I was in this band called Juicebox.
By the way, excellent name that for a band.
That is the best band name ever.
Yeah.
I'm so mad. Hours I've spent trying to come up with a band name.
Yeah. And then we did a couple gigs, some like backyard stuff.
Who is in your band?
So my dad teaches music lessons and kind of.
Was your dad in your band?
I got connections.
Oh, you got connections. Okay.
I got, yeah, bro. I know everyone.
Did you guys write your own stuff or did you cover stuff?
No, we covered stuff. A lot of rocks, you know, Billy Joel, all that great stuff. Back with the Billy Joel again.
You can't
get
it.
Away from it.
No, can't escape the Joel.
What besides Billy Joel were you doing?
I don't know. Luai Luai. You know that song? Yeah, this is a good song. Trying to think. I think that was
it. Just Billy Joel and Louie Louie?
Yeah. Focus repertoire.
Just play half of the River of Dreams and for good measure throw in a Louie Louie.
And call it a day.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
What do you like listening to?
I was listening to a lot of Rush back then. A lot of Rush.
I want to say Levi's taste in music is upsettingly refined. Like he'll come into my dressing room before the show and I'll be like, hey man, check out this song, and I'll say some like stupid punk song from I was a huge fan of punk music growing up, and I'm like, hey man, look at this song, and Levi's like and I can see his eyes like glaze over, and then I'm like, what are you listening to, and he's like, look at this jazz guitarist, and it's this incredible he's listening to like this he showed me a YouTube video of this guy playing jazz for like 75 minutes, and he's like, I'm listening to this, and he walks out of the room. I'm like, listen to it, it's the most complicated song I've heard in my entire life. I don't know, what you just sit in like a smoking jacket and your velvet slippers listening to jazz music at home? Friggin'
no,
genius.
It's mostly metal music I listen to.
He also loves metal.
I love metal, bro. It's,
I know. They've got great drumming.
Jazz and metal and prog rock. What else? What more do you need?
You need Blink-182. You need Green Day. You need the
Green
Offspring.
Day. Yes, I love Green Day.
You need Propaganda. You need Anti-Flag.
Yes, this is like my high school that you're talking
yes.
about.
Yes, Warped Tour.
Yes. Warped Tour.
Oh man, Montreal 15.
Absolutely.
That so that was your rock upbringing?
Yeah, I love the simplicity of like pop punk. I love just Blink-182 playing four chords and getting one riff and hooking it into you, and it just bearing. Andrew Lloyd Webber does that too, I find, with his shows. Like, you don't ever leave an Andrew show without a hook in your head. Everybody knows. If you say Phantom of the Opera, the second you hear that name to me, you just like the bam, 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 bam. Like, everybody knows that hook. And I love that in music. That's what drew me to pop and to that pop punk stuff, is that it was just simple chords with a hook. And it was easy for somebody learning how to play music. It was a great way in because it was like, oh, I can do that. I can play Tom DeLonge's songs.
Yeah.
It took me a few months to learn. And then they got quicker and quicker, but it was a great starter kit for learning how to write songs and build songs.
Yeah, and that speaks to a lot of like a songwriter or composer's longevity as well. I mean, talking about like how prolific Andrew is in his writing, and the fact that Phantom of the Opera is so recognizable. But you know, people would say, you know, same thing about the Beatles. You mentioned Beatles to you know, someone of my parents' generation or someone of Levi's generation, and everybody, you know, can sing at least a handful of Beatles songs. You
oh,
know,
for sure.
With like Andrew Lloyd Webber, he's, you know, one of the most prolific songwriters of the world. Billy Joel, that's why he sticks around for so long, too.
Can we get Billy in here? Is Billy outside?
I don't know. He's,
Billy!
We don't have a helipad, I feel
I
like.
I know, he takes a helicopter.
I imagine him just
garden,
taking
right?
a helicopter everywhere.
I know. Oh, man, if I was Billy Joel, I for sure would take a helicopter everywhere.
Yeah.
Go to get some eggs and milk.
I just imagine it's
right
the,
into that Key Foods.
It's the only way he travels in
He's
my
just
head.
Humming River of Dreams.
Something to aspire to. Well, since we're talking about Andrew Lloyd Webber, now is the time on the podcast when we talk about Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Let's do it.
I feel like the one of the main delights of School of Rock is you're like, whoa, this is Andrew Lloyd Webber. Like, Andrew Lloyd Webber is having fun and being silly. And like, I think this was like a really pleasant surprise to everyone when the show first opened. And I think it was part of like
a big part of the like really good buzz around the show when it started. When you heard Andrew Lloyd Webber doing School of Rock, did you immediately think, oh, that makes sense? Or like, how did you sort of wrap your mind around that? I assume you were working
I was into the fold very early on, and I remember when Nina Lannon, our executive producer, called me and asked me if I would like to have a conversation with Andrew for it. I was in rehearsals for another show at the time, for Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and I stepped out of the rehearsals to take this call, and I spoke to Nina about it, and she mentioned Andrew Lloyd Webber and Julian Fellows and Glenn Slater and School of Rock, and I thought, oh wow, that sounds fantastic. Absolutely, I'd love to meet with him and discuss the project. And I got off the phone and I was back in rehearsal, and 10 minutes later I went, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Julian Fellows, School of Rock?
Huh? Yes, you're like, how British does it get?
Yeah. But you know, going through the experience of working on the, you know, we did a developmental run off Broadway just for a few weeks just to sort of try out the material. And, you know, I mean, Julian Fellows writes epic stories. Andrew Lloyd Webber writes epic musicals. And there's something so epic about this storytelling and what it does to humanity and like never giving up on, you know, on one's dreams, you know, and also being able to follow your heart and follow, chase after the things that you love. And, and going through it, you know, though I was, you know, at first, I think, you know, surprised at the choice of, you know, composer, book writer, you know, it absolutely made sense. And, you know, I think what we ended up with was a show that really touches so many people, of all ages because of who was contributing to the storytelling.
That makes sense. I have to say that, like, after I saw it, I was like, oh, if you think about it, like, Rocket, I think there is a rock through line to a lot of his music. I mean, like with Jesus Christ Superstar and even in Evita, there's like kind of a rock energy to a lot of the music. And the opening to Phantom is like kind of like low-key headbangy music.
Yeah, Phantom is like kind of metal. Like, yeah. There's some songs in it that if you just slapped a distortion-filled guitar on it, it would sound like metal.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, when I heard about it, like, again, I got the audition for it. It was like School of Rock. I was like, oh, cool. And then I saw Andrew Lloyd Webber. I'm like, this might as well be a part of it. Like, if we're going to go big, it may as well be the biggest thing in the entire world. Sure, the guy who wrote and created Downton Abbey and Gosford Park did the book. Yeah. It's a Jack Black movie. They're turning into a musical. And why not have Andrew write the music to it? Like, it's just, it's an embarrassment of riches. It's just, absolutely. It's an unbelievable group of people working on just an epic but like simple story, which I think are the best ones.
Yeah, it's about as epic as it gets. Levi, did you like know who Sir Andrew LW was before this? Okay, so were you like, wait a minute, how is this guy doing rock music?
Yeah, it was kind of weird at first, because, like, I only knew him for Cats and Phantom at that time. So I was like, wait, he does rock? And then my sister was just like, oh, yeah, he does rock. That's, yeah.
She was like, casual.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's a huge Broadway geek. Well, both of them are. And then I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I'll audition. Why not?
Yeah, right.
I love rock, you know? Sweet drumming, man. Getting paid to drum, like, what's better than that?
Literally
nothing. Sorry, Justin.
You think that, wait, I don't know. How was I burned there?
Working with you is pretty fun.
What?
Working with you is pretty fun.
Thanks for the, he's giving me a firm handshake. You guys can't see this.
Wow.
Firm. You make a noise with it? Wait.
There you go.
Well,
you heard the handshake.
I mean, putting the band on stage, the scenes with the band on stage are, I think, the best parts of the show. And, you know, I think in real life, like, you can't force band chemistry. Like, it's something that happens over time, and it's like a unique mixture of personalities and talent. And this seems like a really unique thing to make work on stage, and also to feel, as I think it does, like there is some spontaneous energy. Like, it doesn't just feel like totally choreographed. Mm-hmm. So how do you, in addition to the normal kind of rehearsal you have to do for a musical, like how do you make this band happen and sort of build that bond?
Wow. It's a great question. How do we make that bond? It's... I've had several different casts of kids come through the show in the last year that mm-hmm. I've been involved with it. And it's funny. It always just seems to kind of work. I mean, we have great... First of all, I think we have great casting people who are constantly working to bring and find amazing kids into the show. And so the people that they're bringing into the project are just great people to work with. And, you know, we do the show constantly. I mean, this shit's 8 shows a week. And so after a while, you just kind of feel the different, how everybody kind of works together, the different vibes of everyone. And, yeah, it kind of clicks. That was a medium answer. Ethan, help.
I think. I wish everybody here like graded their answers.
Yeah, that was
medium good.
I give myself a C on that answer. If you're still listening to this,
so I think from my point of view, you know, looking back to when I first got involved, I realized that this was going to take a very sort of special set of circumstances. Not only because we have young people in the show. And there are plenty of shows with young people, but then, you know, we're asking them to be able to sing, to be able to act, to be able to dance, and be able to play instruments at a very high level, and play them live on stage every single night. And there's nothing, there's nothing faked. There's nothing. Yes, we have what we would refer to as the pit band under the stage that plays the songs that the kids aren't playing. But we knew early on that the energy of the show was going to revolve so much around, you know, what these kids did live every night. And within that, we were, you know, getting kids together who didn't have experience, playing, you know, in front of, you know, 1500 people every night, didn't have experience playing on TV, didn't have experience, you know, playing in recording studios. So one of the things we did very early on with our original group of kids, even before we started the developmental run off Broadway, was took them into a world-class recording studio here in New York. And we spent 3 days there just jamming, you know, and we listened to multi-track recordings of a bunch of really famous rock acts, and sort of evaluating them and figuring out how, you know, bass and drums interplayed, and, you know, how guitars, you know, pan left, panned right, solos in the center, or solos doubled. Like, we were really just sort of evaluating music and jamming and, you know, having the opportunity to listen to one another and, you know, critique ourselves as musicians and sort of, you know, get them to start experiencing music in the realm that they were going into and just have a lot of fun. So, I mean, we were playing, you know, a lot of AC/DC that weekend. and we just sort of, you know, Justin has a line in the show. What's the first thing you do when you start a band? You talk about your influences. And we did a lot of that. And we were jamming on those influences. So with that being said, when we started going, you know, once the show was up and created, we needed a way to sort of keep that vibe going. So we have our own rehearsal facility just a few blocks from the theater, like a block from the theater here in New York, where we can hold band rehearsals, where all of the equipment's set up, and anytime we need to, we can get over there, we can jam, we can work on music. All of, you know, any new cast member that's coming into the show, they do all of their rehearsals over there, and, you know, we just kind of keep it, you know, loosey-goosey, baby.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Levi, as as a veteran of Juicebox, like, why do you think why do you think, which sounds pretty serious to me, why do you think it works with you and the other kids and Justin?
I don't know. I think it's just because I've always been in the kids' bands, and just the chemistry works so well. And then Justin just adding on to it, just being like, guys, let's rock, like stuff like that.
I do
just
yell at them like that.
Making us pedal, like push forward into the music, just getting really into it. It's epic.
Yeah, I've started a for real band with three of the kids who are not in the show anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we play these charity shows. Like, it's the chemistry and the jamming is it is real with some of these kids, and the four of us did a charity concert like a year ago, and then we were like, oh, this kind of works. It's me, Brandon Niederauer, who's the original guitar player, Jersey Sullivan, who's the original James in the show, and Ragoff, who is one of the drummers that came along, and the four of us just loved playing music together, and so now we do it for charity like every few months. And
that's amazing.
It's a blast, and it's actually really fun.
Brandon is like the mini Hendrix, basically.
Is the mini Hendrix, yeah. Yes.
He's incredible.
He's unbelievable. Yeah.
I was going to say, as someone who has played with like adult bands, is it more fun in certain ways to play with kids?
It's really the talent and the chemistry, the thing that you're talking about. It's like the age thing doesn't really come into play with some of these kids. I mean, I don't know what Ethan did when they first started or how they found them, but their ear for it is incredible. And like, I remember when we first were rehearsing with this band that I'm in with these kids who graduated from the show, the bass player, who's like 13 maybe, Jersey is, was running the rehearsal. He just was like, that wasn't tight enough. We need to go back and tighten that up. And I'm like, yep. So they're just like, they just hear it. They're brilliant. And I think that like, it doesn't really matter how old you are. It's how it's your love of the music kind of just comes through and your commitment to it.
Mm-hmm. I was curious in general, like how an audition for School of Rock is different from an audition for like Carousel. I mean, what were you involved in the casting process, Ethan?
Oh yeah, every moment of it. Well, it would differ from a Carousel audition in the fact that you're not often asked to play electric guitar in a Carousel audition.
There's that. Yeah.
Sometimes. I didn't see the recent revival, but I don't think they added distorted guitar.
It's really great, but there is no electric guitar.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly in any Broadway show, there's certain aspects that are very similar in the realm of casting. You know, can you act? Can you sing? Can you dance? The School of Rock is different because we ask people to bring in a pair of drumsticks in Levi's case, or you know, their own guitar. And I remember, you know, going back to the original cast of kids and trying to find them. I was daunted with the task. I'm sitting there saying, "Are we going to find 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds that can play at the level that I am imagining in my head, and that I know that a Broadway audience will sort of require?" And we, thankfully, we had a great casting team from Tara Rubin Casting, you know, and we were all kind of like going out and scouring the internet and, you know, television shows and just trying to find, you know, these kids from wherever we could. And I remember meeting Brandon Niederauer for the first time, and he came into one of these auditions, and I hadn't heard of him at the time. And he comes in with his guitar, and his dad comes in and brings a little pedal board, you know, with like a distortion pedal. I was like, oh, this is cute. I said, well, what are you gonna play and sing for us? And he said, well, I'm gonna play Dead or Alive. You know, and he goes into the intro, and I was like, oh, that's really cute. He can arpeggiate, you know, on a clean sound really nicely. Oh, he's got a really nice voice. And I actually got up and went over to the piano, and I was like, I'm just going to jam with him and see how tight he is rhythmically. And, you know, we went through the second verse and second chorus of the song, and I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to dig in just in case he wants to play a little bit of a solo here. And I remember the moment that we got to the guitar solo and he stomped on his distortion pedal to pull up his lead tone. And his entire demeanor changed and his face changed.
And he does have that face.
And
he
has
that
stank face.
Stank face. And he tore into one of, for lack of a better term, the tastiest guitar solos I've ever heard. And he wasn't copying the original guitar solo. This is something that he felt inside of him, and you know, and finding somebody like Brandon Niederauer who really feels it inside of them. That plays from their heart and not from their head. It's a really special thing, and we've been really lucky. I mean, Levi, every single kid that we've had come through the show to this point does come from that world. You ask these kids what their musical influences are, none of them are saying Taylor Swift. They're all like Levi and talking about Rush and AC/DC and Aerosmith and you know these great rock acts that you know that I grew up with, and it was really kind of impressive to hear.
That's nice to hear, because like the, you know, in the music industry, the like, oh, is rock dead talk, like, you know, is always sort of like,
yeah,
humming in the background. But it's the fact that Levi is listening to these acts is like really encouraging, and it's not dead.
That's not gonna die.
It never will die.
Yeah.
No.
Rock will never die. What did you sing for your audition?
I sang Best of You by the Foo Fighters. So my audition was, for lack of a better term, nuts. I had to come in and sing a rock song of my choice. I had to do, I mean, the lines for doing the show are essentially, it's a big monologue. So I had to do 10 pages of that. I had to play a guitar solo. I had to sing three of the songs from the show. One of them is a cappella. One of them was with music. So it's, yeah, Dewey does a bunch of stuff in the show. And yeah, but I come from rock. And I love rock and roll. And I thought Foo Fighters was a fun choice for an audition song for a Broadway show. Yeah. And this is one where you can do that and it works.
That's like a high note to come in on out of nowhere, too.
Oh, I love it. I love me some Dave Grohl. Just screaming into that mic. Yeah.
That seems intimidating, but
yeah,
I'm sure it's great when it works.
Yeah, I mean, I auditioned in a basement of a theater and there were like three people in the room, and it was 11 o'clock in the morning, and I walked in just screaming Foo Fighters. It was great. Yeah, that's fun.
I'm going to give that answer a B. That was a good answer.
You're improving.
I'm improving. Great. Yes!
By the end of the podcast.
I got another confession to make.
Wow.
No, but in someone like Justin's case and in Levi's case and everyone that we've put in the show, there's something memorable that happens in the audition room that very first time you see them, where something clicks and you say, okay, well, maybe not every single piece is right where we'd like it to be, but there's something so memorable that you just know at that instant, like, they're going to be in the show. You know, and that was specifically the case with Justin.
When was the moment you knew I was going to be in the show? Don't answer that.
Honestly, the moment that I was like, oh my god, he actually can play guitar. We've had a wide range. Like, oh my god, he can sing and act and he can play guitar. You know, we've had some Deweys that we've had to put through a lot of training to get them up to speed to play the role, where Justin like came in and actually played a solo, and I was like, that will work just as is. All of the pieces
That'll
are
work.
There. He ticks every single box in terms of what we need musically, so I'm good.
Yeah, that was one. That was actually a really a fun moment for me. So I auditioned for Andrew. Not everybody does, but I remember I played the solo from Teacher's Pet, and he looked at me and went, so you can play. And I was like, yes!
That's amazing.
Yes!
I was going to ask, like, do you just have some fun Andrew Lloyd Webber stories to share? That's pretty great.
That would be, yeah. I mean, that was, again, and at the end of my audition, I remember he said to me, our director, Lawrence, he wasn't there for the second time that I auditioned for the show, but Andrew was there. And then at the end of the audition, he said, oh, you know, Lawrence liked you very much. And then I went, hope you did too. And then everybody but him laughed. And then I got my guitar and I walked out of the room.
You were like, and I'm done for the day.
Yeah, and I'm like, I hope this read well. Okay. Bye forever.
I have to say, for me, the most memorable experience working with Andrew is the fact that, you know, you think of Andrew Lloyd Webber and you think of all of these shows that he has written and how prolific he is as a composer, but, you know, some people fail to remember that, you know, even with the title of Lord before his name,
he's a lord.
He's a lord.
I thought, yeah, he was only a sir.
No, he's a lord. He's Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber. Wow. But he's still a normal person. He likes all of the same things. He likes vacationing. He likes, you know, listening to music. And, you know, I remember in some of my early interactions with him, and, you know, he and I would go out for lunch or something, he would just like to talk about the music he listened to. You know, and though he wrote the scores, you know, to Cats, Phantom of the Opera, the reason why you hear that rock influence is because he's a rocker at heart, you know, but his career started where doing anything rock and roll in theater was really pushing the envelope, mm-hmm, you know, because it wasn't a common voice that you heard in musical theater. And thanks to him, that paved the way for, you know, every single rock and roll show that's happened on Broadway in the West End since.
Yeah, I actually only saw Cats for the first time in this most recent revival. And as I was sitting there, I feel like Cats has become, you know, the show that's like equally loved and reviled, depending on who you talk to. And as I was watching it, I was like, this is a truly strange show. Like, it's like, I can't imagine, you know, young Andrew Lloyd Webber going into some producer's office and being like, here's the idea.
Listen, I'm going to get 40 people. I'm going to dress them as cats. We're going to take a T.S. Eliot poem and they're going to sing about it on a pile of garbage. Exactly. It's like, beautiful. Exactly. Beautiful. Run for 20 years.
Yes. And they'll be doing ballet the entire time.
The first two musicals I ever saw were in the West End when I was 13 years old, and they were both Andrew shows. I saw Phantom, the matinee of Phantom, and I left the matinee of Phantom, and I was like, I love music theater. I want to do this forever. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. When the chandelier fell, all the music, everything, I was blown away. And I saw Cats that night, and I was like, huh. I'd never heard of T.S. Eliot. I was front row. There was just one cat in my face the entire time, just like rotating. And I was like, I'm not sure what the show is about. I don't think I understand. I'd love to go see it again as an adult. But as a child, I was very confused as to what the cats were doing.
Yeah, the friends of mine who saw it as children, either it's the thing that like made them love musical theater, yeah, or they were like totally weirded out and frightened by being like climbed upon.
I was a bit scared. I was very confused.
Yes, there are weird sexual undertones to Cats too. There's like the cat orgy. Like, right, there's a lot going on in Cats.
Levi, plug your ears.
Yes, he's seen.
Read
cats.
A book.
He knows Cats.
I've never seen it though.
No?
Oh, you just know the music.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
I'm actually allergic.
Well,
I give that joke a C.
That was C minus.
I'm only allergic to real cats.
I remember the first time I saw Cats, and I had very mixed emotions, but one of the things that stuck with me, and the reason why I think it ran for 20 some odd years in its original run on Broadway, is the fact that it pushed every single envelope and every single convention of what we prescribed to as musical theater. You know, it's not Carousel. It was cats singing about a T.S. Eliot poem, telling the story of a T.S. Eliot poem while doing ballet on a pile of garbage.
Yeah.
You know, and that was something, and getting in your face, and it was something that nobody had ever seen up to that.
Now I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a great, what an amazing idea.
You know, and for me, that's precisely the reason why it spoke to so many people. It was like, oh, you can do what? We can do what? We can do what with our storytelling? And again, it influenced everything that that came after it in theater. You know?
And going back to the rock influence in his work too, I was like, I remember sitting in the theater and hearing like the synthesizer kick in, and I was like, yeah, like that does kind of give you chills, I have to admit.
Oh, I just want to hear Steve Perry sing Memory. Like, it'd be so great. Wouldn't that be great?
Wow, yes.
Just with Journey back in it? Yeah. You can take any of his music and transpose it onto a rock band. And
I heard this morning that Steve Perry might be doing like some new solo music, so I would like put that number one on the wish list.
No.
That would be amazing.
Was just reading about that last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know not to get too excited, but I was a little excited.
Steve Perry, please.
Please. Come back. If you listen to the Billboard on Broadway podcast.
Do something with Billy Joel. Please.
Please. Amazing. Well, I will close the podcast on a very deep note. I was thinking about, you know, like what is so, you know, touching and relatable about this show. And you know, I think it's great that such a big part of it is about, like, that music education is, like, important and wonderful and, like, a great music teacher can change your life. But it's not, like, an orchestra teacher. It's not, like, a country western show. So I wondered if you think that the show is really just about, like, the transformative power of music in general, or if there's something specific about it being rock that makes it so powerful.
I think that rock is an accessible form of music. I think that it's like it's simpler than compositional music or orchestration. It's something that I think a lot of people can really relate to. And I think with kids, giving them a music education, I think is so important for kids, because anytime you can give a kid a form of language that they can communicate other than like speaking or writing like tests in school, it's invaluable. So like these kids speak to each other with their music and through their music. Like you said, like Brandon plays guitar from his heart. Levi plays these drum solos and they're different every night and it's from his soul. And anytime you can teach kids a different language or different way to communicate or different way to express themselves, I think that that's one of the most valuable things that you can do. And our show really celebrates that. And one of my favorite stories from this whole show is Rachel Katsky, who used to play Katie, the bassist in our show, came to see the show, had never played bass guitar before, but went home and she said, I'm going to be in that show. And she went and she picked up the bass and she learned how to play it and she auditioned and she got in. And that story happens a lot with the kids that we have in the show now, that the show, they heard the language that the kids were speaking on stage through music, and they took that back into their lives and they grew because of it.
Yeah, Brandon Niederauer, our original Zach in the show, started to play guitar after going on a family trip, and coming home in the back of their car was watching a movie, and it was School of Rock with Jack Black. And he watched that movie and said, I want to play guitar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's playing, you know, Barclays with Scorpion and, you know, doing all sorts of amazing things. But, you know, it's because of that. For me growing up, the transformative power of music was the fact that it was like therapy for me. It was therapeutic. You know, my parents had a tough time on the weekends pulling me away from the piano. Like, go play outside. No, I'm going to sit here for 6 hours and just, you know, play Billy Joel tunes, you know, or play Journey. you know, because it, you know, it allowed me to express things that I didn't even have words for, you know, at the age of, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, 10 years old, you know, and I still feel that way.
Amazing. Well, thanks for coming, you guys.
Thank you.
Levi,
there's a tiny thumbs up from Levi.
Yeah.
School of Rock is playing on Broadway until January 20th of next year. So if you're in New York, I encourage you to go see it. The Billboard on Broadway podcast is now on many new platforms. In case you're not aware, we are no longer only on iTunes and Acast, but also on Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher, among many other places where you might find your favorite podcast. So please subscribe wherever it is that you listen. Give us lots of nice reviews and stars. As always, if you want to tweet about the podcast, use hashtag Billboard on Broadway. I am at Rebecca Milzoff. Or if you want to look us up on Instagram, I'm at You Down with RMM, and hope to have you back next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.